so happy to hear.
Sorry to be so dumb. It's like, this is the part that's just like, this is just dumb.
What is up? Welcome to another episode of All Over VoiceOver with Kip VH. I'm your host, Kip VH, and with me in studio. And by the way, just a quick note, if you're enjoying the show, please, please drop by iTunes and give us a review, stars or whatever, and do that. That helps us out greatly. And another thing that helps me out greatly is having my lovely and talented guest in the studio today, Larissa Gallagher. Thank you so much for being here, dude.
You're so welcome. I'm sorry.
What's the matter?
I'm still reeling from the kind of the weirdness of sitting across the table from a friend of mine with microphones and talking
to them. It's a strange thing.
It's odd. I like it. Don't get me wrong, but it's it just feels a bit funny.
It's weird because we never talk from this far apart from each other.
That's right.
It's like having a conversation across a coffee table.
That's right. And in fact, I think every time I talk to you, we're usually both standing.
Right.
So I'm also like craning my neck to look up to you. So now I feel like I'm on equal ground for once.
That's right. It's very, very nice. Well, I mean, we've known each other when was the first? Was it Aqua Peeps was the first place I met you?
I think it was.
At Pat Duke's house.
I think that's right. Around the pool.
Yes.
With your beautiful wife and daughter, Ilsa. Whose birthday was yesterday?
Yesterday, yeah. Ilsa turned 10. Yeah, thank you.
To Ilsa.
So we've known each other for maybe 4 or 5 years and stuff. And,
yeah, about that. About
and
that.
And Aussie Day parties and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So much fun.
That's coming up soon.
Oh, is it?
Yes. Listeners, you will all not be invited. Hey, look, if you're in Hermosa Beach and you happen to see a big Aussie flag somewhere, come over into our house and join our party.
Well, how did you find yourself? You just mentioned when we were talking about La La Land, you told me that you were a dancer, singer, like what?
Yeah.
There are so many things that I know about you but then don't know about you.
Yeah.
What's been your journey? How'd you get started on all this stuff?
I actually started, I suppose you could say I started like age five or six, as a ballet dancer.
Really?
That was my journey from age 6 to maybe like 17, 18, around
no
there.
Kidding.
Yeah, yeah. That was kind of, you know, started off as the little acorn gumnut baby, a little yellow tutu, which was super great. And then progressed. And actually, like, you know, I was with a company in Australia and we toured Europe as age 14, 15. And it was fantastic. But I just knew, I always knew that whilst I loved the discipline of it and I loved the performance aspect, that's when I realized that was kind of the calling. I was always getting, you know, the comedy roles, and I was never the prima ballerina, beautiful, you know, pas de deux kind of girl. I was always the run on stage, make a silly face and then run off.
I didn't realize that there were clowns in ballet. I don't know enough about, and not to call you a clown.
No, of course.
But like, but your description sounds very clownish in the world of, is that?
I would say in the world of ballet, the roles that are the kind of, for want of a better word, comic relief they're more actory rather than dancing. Not every ballet has them, of course, but usually there's, you know, there's the little comic relief moments, and that was often the roles that I found that I was being placed in. And even in new ballets, when people would come in and choreograph for the company or whatever, I would suddenly find myself in that kind of role doing the, you know, jokey, sidekicky kind of thing.
That's wild.
It does sound weird for ballet, but it's, I mean, in that genre,
I
obviously.
Mean, I have an image of ballet, which is so completely, you know, based on like this crazy Chevy Chase movie, Modern Times, or, you know, Black Swan, or like some of these places. But the truth of it, I don't know really anything about.
Yeah, well,
other than, you know, like,
what do you say?
Those things.
Yeah. Well, and I should probably clarify by saying that, you know, the majority was, you know, the corps de ballet or the, you know, the ensemble ballet, which is just in the background. But if there was ever a moment for me to come forward, it would be like I was the messenger girl or I was the person bringing the something, as opposed to the love interest or the central. Yeah, I think so. Whilst I always say comic relief, it's probably probably just me because I was like, oh, this is my moment to shine. So I'm going to be an idiot and get as much attention as possible. And people laughed. And so in my head, I was the comic relief. But yeah, so it was probably more that. It was like the roles that I was cast in was leaning in that direction. And I just knew that that wasn't, you know, I was never going to be the willowy, long-limbed, thin dancer. And I was like, and I like to eat. And so I was like, I'm not going to live that world, you know, for the rest of my life.
Did you have like traditional schooling with that too? And was it an after school thing or did it become more like tutoring and traveling and all that jazz, or
mainly the after school, but it would have been like every day I caught the bus back from school to ballet and spent the next, you know, 3 hours at ballet and then went home. And then so it was, you know, kind of like a lot of sporting things. And then the tour that we went on was a 2 month or six week tour of Europe. It was like a youth ballet festival that they had, or a youth performing arts festival that they had running in Europe. I don't actually know. I should look to see if they still do it. But yeah, so our company was invited to tour throughout former Yugoslavia and Switzerland and that. Wow. So yeah,
what an incredible experience to see the world in that way, in that context at a formative age and stuff, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that kind of the responsibility of that and the discipline of that all lent itself very well to just transfer immediately into the theater. And I was always able to sing, so that was into musical theater. I'd been doing speech and drama classes all that way, you know, all along the way as well. So I think just everything was kind of gearing me in this path.
That's great.
Interestingly enough, I would say is that I probably started speech classes around the same time as I started ballet. So it's interesting that even, you know, that the voiceover world, I was kind of preparing myself before I even knew that it was a world to you know, go into as a career. So
that's wild.
Yeah.
Did you start your VO work back in Australia, or did you really start that in earnest when you got to the States?
I would say in earnest, definitely, when I got to the States. And even then, you know, probably not for a couple of years until when I came to the States.
How old were you when you came here? Roughly.
12.
12.
12. Kiff, you never ask a lady her age.
Oh,
in
I wasn't
Hollywood.
Asking your current age. I wasn't trying to put together a timeline. I'm sorry, you're right. That was a horrible question. No. It was a horrible way to.
That is silly.
So you must have been, when you came to the States.
I was 97 years old when I came to the United States and I had a wonderful time here.
Sorry.
No, I'm joking. I shouldn't have done that. That was mean.
Okay.
I came here 10 years ago.
Okay. All right, so you're a son. No, yeah. So you've been working around. And then, very cool.
Yeah, so I spent a couple of, so actually just a very shortcut my journey was that I had been doing theatre and musical theatre in Australia for a while. I was never as successful as I wanted to be. I had done, like, I had actually started doing a bit of voiceover stuff before I quit permanently. And oddly enough, it was I had been knocked back for a voiceover gig, which was, I think, kind of like the first thing I ever officially auditioned for. Huh. I'd been given stuff along the way for friends, you know, companies that they work for, or someone was like, you know,
we
know
need
this
someone
person.
Who can talk. Yeah.
And but then the first thing I ever auditioned for was actually to be the, you know, it was a 8-part documentary, television broadcast documentary, and it was apparently down to me and one other person, and the other lady got it. And because I was in a very petulant state of mind at that point, instead of going, oh my goodness, this is the first thing I've ever auditioned for, network, broadcast, documentary. How incredible that I got down to the final two.
Yeah.
I took the other emotional pathway of going, this sucks. Yeah, exactly.
That's
and so,
a powerful thing, though. I mean, especially when it comes to you in a way that, I you know, People like to remind you often about how rare it is or how this opportunity is, and then when it comes and it doesn't fall your way, it can be really, you start to paint that paint that future for yourself.
Exactly.
And it can be a really intense thing to get close and then
Well, return. And I think we as people, I'm going to go very deep here, we try, you know, we create a narrative for ourselves and then just slam everything into that narrative, regardless of whether it fits or not. And that's what I was doing. I was convinced that I wasn't, you know, that I was, you know, I would not use this word now, but at the time, that I was a failure as an actor and I never made it, and all the work that I've been putting into it, it wasn't for me and it was everyone else's fault, and it, you know, why is the world turned against me? And instead of going, oh my goodness, here's this incredible opportunity, this is where I should be leading my career in this place that suddenly is gone, we're very interested in what you do, I chose to fit that into the, cram it into the box of, that's just another thing I failed, I couldn't even do that, as opposed to, oh my goodness, this, look at what you have in your hand, focus on that and go that way. And I think generally in life, we all tend to do that. We factor in past experiences to relate to the present moment rather than just looking at the present moment, accepting it for what it is, and then kind of moving forward. So I quit acting and theatre, and we've talked about this before, but I was done, and I moved back home. I moved back to my parents' house. I did the whole kind of, you know, breakdown stereotypical kind of thing, and then started working at a radio station and regained a love for the spoken voice, I suppose. But then even then, I met my now husband, who was American and came to America for him, because again, it was like, oh, I love radio's great, but you know, I don't know what I want to do, blah, blah, blah. Let's go and see what this is about. And then, yeah, so I was living in DC at the time, and I'd been there for, you know, maybe like a year and a half before the voiceover thing kind of came back around. And it was really him who kind of heard something like a demo that I'd done. And he was like, what is this? Why aren't you need to go and do this? And I was like, oh, but I'm never going to be able to do it. And what if I fail? I'm going to fall apart.
Oh, man. So Ed was knocking on that box that you had packed.
Yeah, very much so. And we kind of made this deal. I said, look, you know, I'll do it, but you're going to be there to pick up the pieces because they're going to be there. And, you know, I mean, great. He was right. I mean, in that there were no pieces and I keep moving forward. So it was just, you know, sometimes when everything's right, it works. You know, it's kind of like Tetris. It all just falls into place because that's where it was always meant to be. But I also think I had to go through that big, oh, shoot.
That's okay.
Voiceover, hit the microphone. I had to go through that big, you know, kind of thing to get to the other side, to go get all of that out.
Yes.
And not start again, but rebuild, like the phoenix rise from the ashes and blah, blah, blah. So,
It's fascinating to me when folks have the interest, the desire, the hunger, the skill set, and they do it, and then something, you hit a wall, and then you retract from that wall. And some people never are pushed through it again.
Right.
Some folks just go in a different direction.
Sure.
Like, you know, but then some folks get the opportunity to return to that and climb that wall and go, oh my God. And it can be in career.
Yeah.
But sometimes, you know, I mean, it can be in relationship, life, all these other different places where those walls live and how you build your strength to face that thing again. It's really fascinating to me about people's experience with that.
That's right, and I think there's a very, you know, telling. I can't think of the word, but the essence of that is that it's really important to listen to yourself. And it's like the toughest thing to do. And I heard this saying the other day, which I thought was fantastic, is that we talk to ourselves more than we ever in our life talk to every other single person that we meet.
Huh.
And it's fascinating how much negative self-talk that we talk to. We would never talk to everyone else like we talk to ourselves, and we talk to ourselves more than anyone else. And it is that, you know, when you know, you know. You know it's the right thing to, you know, you meet the person that's going to be the person for the rest of your life or the person for now or whatever. But if you really learn to kind of listen to what's really happening inside you and get rid of all the, you know, the crappy kind of negativity or insecurity or all of that stuff, you know, and it's tough and you can't do it all the time. But the more you practice doing that, I think you just get clearer of what your focus is and knowing, you know, because sometimes we bash our head against the wall over and over because that door is meant to be closed. But that doesn't mean that the wall and the door, you know what I mean. And it doesn't mean that, you know, that there isn't an opening that's right next to you that you're not even looking at because you're so blinded by the thing in front of you.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, it goes both ways, but it is kind of a fascinating human trait that we, you know, insist on one thing when the really great thing is right next door or the really great thing's right in front of us, but we refuse to see it because of whatever reason or because of our past or because we're scared or or whatever. I got deep.
That's all right. I like deep.
It's good. It's good.
I truly do. Well, let me when you started, so Ed pushes you. Here's your reel. He's like, okay, get back at this, do it. And you say, okay, fine. What was your process to flip those switches and turn things on and go from out to to in?
Well, at the time, so two things I had, I think, again, like I was saying, using the Tetris example, when everything is right and aligned, it just so happens. And because I just moved to the States, or I'd only been in the States for a short time, I wasn't allowed to work because I didn't have working papers because I was still going through the immigration process.
How long did that immigration process take for you?
So I got an official work permit fairly quickly, like within a few months, but most people won't recognize that officially until you get your green card. Like lot of companies and stuff like that, it's harder to get a, you know, a 9-to-5 job because they want
Someone who can work.
That's right.
And they might turn – it's like, oh, well, this is a nice temporary work, but what happens if you're in the middle of the project and you don't get your green card?
Exactly, exactly. So from their point of view, they want the permanency of a green card, and that takes a couple of years to get. What took me a couple of years. Okay. So, you know, that's a whole other political conversation that we can have another day on another podcast. But, yeah, it took me about 2 years to actually get that green card. Wow. So for a long time, it was kind of – it was difficult for me to get a, you know – quote unquote real job.
Yeah.
And so it was the perfect time because, you know, I'd saved money to move to the States that if it didn't work out with Ed that I could support myself until I moved back to Australia or went wherever or blah, blah, blah. And so I had a lot of free time and I kind of just went online and I looked through. I was like, well, if I'm going to do this, I need to get a demo made. And at the time I had my Australian demo, but and this is an interesting journey in itself, but I thought, you know, if I'm going to get work in America, I need an American accent demo. And so that's what I first set out to get until later I realized my mistake, but we'll come back to that. But yeah, so then the process was that I just went on the internet and researched. And I think that's, you know, it's when you, like anything, when you find something you really love, you just head first into it. And I've got a bit of an addictive personality anyway.
Yeah, me too.
So I was just happy to listen to, you know, there's so much free resource even then 10 years ago, but there was a ton of stuff. And I discovered, you know, the equivalent of VoiceBank. Well, and then I discovered VoiceBank, but there's a kind of DC, Maryland, Virginia have their own thing called the Producers Handy Dandy.
Nice.
And so it has all the demos. So I listened to all the demos and there was a couple of people that I were like, oh, they sound great. And I just went to their website, found their email and just said, hey, interested in getting into voiceover, really loved your demo. Do you have time to spare for a coffee and a chat? Or at least can you let me know who made your demo and, you know, go from there? And so I sat down with a couple of people, responded, a lot of people didn't, found an incredible demo maker who was in New York, went, caught the bus up there every week for a few weeks, got a demo made, and then went and joined all the pay-to-plays and all of that because I was non-union at the time.
Yeah.
And then built from there. And then, but what I discovered, to go back to that point, because I put both my Australian and the American one up, and it wasn't that there was a problem with the American, but what made me unique in the sea of Americans in America was my accent.
Yes.
So in order to build my resume, build my experience and everything, I found that a ton of stuff was coming to me through my, well, and I say my native accent, but everyone thought I was British, so technically.
What?
Through a British accent.
So you mentioned this when we were doing the, this is an adjunct conversation. But
oh, to the, yeah.
When we had the panel that we did at Kamikaze.
With all the other girls,
yeah, where you said it's just a joy to be able to do a character who is Australian.
That's right.
Because you don't get to do that.
That's
that
right.
Often.
Yeah, and I think especially, I think for that, especially in animation and video game, that holds very true. Because, I mean, in the corporate world, generally in corporate and commercial, I'm pretty much evenly slated now with working British, American, and Australian, but I really started out very much British, somewhat Australian. But then I really wanted to get into video game and animation, and there were little to no Australian characters around.
Really?
Because it's mainly British, or it's the kind of the
fantasy
characters, Lord of the Rings,
right,
Galadriel,
where
blah, blah,
it's
blah.
This what is it, the transatlantic dialect?
That's
or
right.
It's sort of like an Irish-y, like I'm learning with dialect work, mm-hmm. like as a friend, I don't know if you know Dan Considine, but he's a character actor who's really, really talented with dialect, and we'll just sit there and study dialects and get mm-hmm. really, really specific and be like, this is Southern Wales. This is the difference between,
jealous.
You know, doing, yeah, I don't have that kind of an ear.
No, right.
So
yeah,
so
yeah.
I'll go, this is my Britishy, you know.
I'll listen to the international dialect thing beforehand and
exactly.
grab it in. Yeah, yeah.
My ear is more celebrity. Like, give me a celebrity reference. If you want Colin Firth, then I'll, you know, pitch him up and make him proper.
Proper, yeah. Well, and you're spectacular at that. And I think that's...
Oh,
you're welcome. I do love your Vince Vaughn. I can.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. I appreciate that. You like my. You know, I'm trying.
And what is that? And it's Vince Vaughn into.
Vince Vaughn into Tom Hanks.
Yeah, can you do that?
Yeah,
please?
Sure.
Oh, no,
so that's all right. So Vince Vaughn's up here, right? He's talking fast. But if you just slow him down and put a tie on him, it's Tom Hanks.
That's the magic trick. That I find that incredible because that's all just working within the same. Realm, but I suppose it's just.
But like, I think that dialect, mm-hmm. the Vince Vaughn dialect, is basically just the Chicago. It's all mouth placement. I'm just sticking it in the back of my throat.
Right.
Trade secrets, right? But I'm giving it away. Just saying, you pitch it in the back of your mouth, and blah 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 blah.
Right.
This sound.
Yeah.
And then the jokes. That's the thing. Is like I try to come at it from a sketch comedy standpoint with
right.
those guys, and then the Hanks thing is just to make it a little bit more emotive. And
right.
go down at the end of the, but I'm trying to, you know, like there was almost a little bit of Pat Fraley in my Tom Hanks.
That's, yeah. Know? But it's also knowing where that lives as well. Cause
right.
that in itself.
I think that's true. And
yeah.
that you're really trying to, there's the sound.
Yeah.
But then there's the emotion. There's how is he acting? Can I do how they're acting?
That's right. And it's you like, know? You know, it's a slower internal kind of pace
that
Hanks has versus Vince Vaughn or whatever. And that's how that differentiation happens.
Exactly.
But it like I do, you know, I tend to work in a lot of different accents for that reason.
Interesting.
But impersonations, I can't get my head around that. That's, you
really?
Know. But to go back to your friend, is that, you know, the kind of the intricacies of, you know, especially with UK, you know,
boy.
Welsh and Irish and Northern Irish and Southern Irish and blah, blah, blah.
And
you
then
know,
like
and the,
South African dialect. And some of these dialects, they're so heavily influenced by Europe plus and then
around,
like Afrikaans
yeah.
and like just trying to get a sense of that.
It's
you
crazy.
Know, it's
yeah.
crazy.
And I think being an accented actor, what I found first up was that pretty much, you know, everyone was saying, well, you are the person that does every accent. except American. And I was like, okay, well, if that's what I am, I embrace that. You know, I mean, that's great. Thank you very much. But then in the world of when video game and animation came around, that I mean, it's still there's a lot of opportunity with a lot of other accents. There's a lot of American work, obviously, but rarely Australian. Or if it is Australian, it's this kind of, yeah, mate, oh, too right, brother blue, you know, which is not, I can't even improvise.
It's,
you know,
it's that really, really broad.
Bro, that Steve Irwin, that kind of, you know.
Jocko.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like super, super country kind of Australian. And I'm just not that. So I would never get the Australian roles because it's like she doesn't sound like that. That's what I want when I think of Australian. Yeah. I think that's changing now, which is great. And that was when, like as you said, when Laguna Blue came around for Monster High.
Yeah.
That was just like that. And I didn't know it was that when I auditioned for it. Like
really?
It was, yeah, I think it was like the audition was for Laura, I think was the
character's
name.
Oh, really? For Dracula?
No.
It was just Laura.
I think it was just Laura.
So they were using code names kind
of? Code names, yeah. So I'm reading the script and it said Australian. I was like, oh, great. And the girl, you know, the character was very, I just was kind of like, oh, this is a bit, you know, this girl was a lot more popular than I probably was at school. But other than that, the essence of her was the same. And so I was like, oh, sweet, this is great. And then it was like, oh, hang on a sec, this is for this? What? You know, so that's been lovely. You know,
that's been so
lovely. Yeah. And I think because of that as well, then I've felt more of a freedom to push that. And I think, you know, the benefit of having a lot of super talented Aussies in the on-camera field and stuff has been beneficial because people kind of understand, oh, you don't just get put into that one little bucket and that's all you can do. So
right.
Yeah, so it's been that's been great. But generally, you know, I think she's probably my standout kind of Australian thing, but everything else is generally British or American or corporate Australian or something like that. But
that's so interesting too, that in a way, because you are an accented person, that even though you're not native British, you have a native accent, and that's good. That we don't, at least we don't have an American doing a British accent.
Well, that's
right.
That
makes us feel a little bit better about things.
That's right. And then, you know? And then I suppose to be perfectly honest, I would say, because I'm from Perth in Western Australia, and we have a lot of British population in the city, as does a lot of Australia. I mean, we're in British colony.
It's a British colony, yeah.
Pretty much. So our dialect, everyone always says, oh, you know, does Australia have a ton of different, you know, can you tell Sydney from Melbourne from Perth? And you really can't. But if you wanted to pick something, as generally I would say that urban Perthites, sandgropers, would be a little bit more well-spoken and lean more British. So I think that's why people probably immediately thought, well, you sound more British than you do.
Interesting.
You know, Crocodile Dundee.
Yeah.
So that was where that kind of lent, which is fine with me. I mean, I did a ton of speech training to sound more refined. So thanks, Mom and Dad.
Was it something you were trying to train out of your voice when you were getting back into it? I've heard people from other countries who felt like with their American dialect that they were trying to train their dialect out of themselves. Or so that is that something that you had to face at all or not really?
You know, very much so, because I think like the reason Australians generally are very good with accents is A, because we get a bootload of American television and British television and film and everything. So we're surrounded by it.
Yeah.
And also the majority of theatre is either your British plays of Shakespeare and everything or American musicals. And we do have like incredible Australian playwrights and incredible Australian plays as well, but just not enough to sustain
the stages
a national stage, you know. Exactly. And so when we're doing an American play, we're all doing an American accent. And so we're all trained in that way. But the one thing I did find when I came over is the difference between, it's because you can do the sounds of an American accent, But the hardest thing for me to learn was the musicality. And that's why it's still somewhat difficult for me, or I have to think to have a conversation in American or pretend to be American and have a whole conversation with you like this.
Yeah.
I'll probably slip here and there because my head is thinking in a Larissa musicality.
Uh-huh.
Ality,
yeah,
that doesn't match with an American musicality, which would go down at the end of set. So that was, even though I was flipping vowels and rolling R's and doing all the what could be seen as a typical American accent, people would still catch me. And I could only ever do it if I had a script because it's written.
You can plot that, yeah.
I can plot it and I can see that's the end of the sentence. That's here. So I know how the framework musically sits. So and that's still a way, I would say I'm close to flawless, if not flawless, to pick up and sight read something in American accent, and especially in a character accent, 100% flawless.
Yeah.
But yeah, where I still have a little bit of difficulty is when people say, so talk to me in American. And I was like, well, I can, but then I lose my personality. You know, I don't have an American personality, so I can talk like this, but
it's like you're putting on an American character. It's
exactly.
Kind of like being a puppet.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so character work comes easily.
Yeah.
Because it is a character and it's all there on the page. But, you know, when I have to do, I can't even think, but, you know, a lot of commercial work at the moment is very much, who are you inside and who this kind of, you know, just be yourself. And it's like, inherently, I'm not being myself because I've got an accent on.
Right.
So it's bridging that gap closer and closer. And which I think is what you were saying is the training yourself out of your accent, I think, is more that, like training yourself to be yourself in a different accent.
As if your accent is a filter.
As if, yeah, rather than
a thin mask that you wear in the context of a commercial where you're just doing a thing for pledge because you are, you know, a blonde woman who's called in on this role.
Yeah.
And you start speaking and they go, well, we didn't say she's an Australian woman.
Yes, sir.
That all of a sudden it's like, well, now I can't be considered for that work, even though, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's a weird reality to have to or weird. I'm sorry. That makes it sound
no,
like.
No, that's all right.
But you know what I mean? Like just
excuse
as.
Me.
San Luis lives in a weird reality.
How rude.
But it's an interesting challenge that is just something I hadn't considered. And
yeah.
That's interesting.
And I think as a general like acting exercise, it applies to everyone,
yeah.
Is that if you are trying to hide yourself to be your character, it's going to fail. But if you embrace the character or the world, the reality,
yeah.
But just drop on the accent, I'm not hiding my accent to do the American accent. It's just I can be me with an American accent. And I think for a long time I was trying to be the character that always talked like an American. And it just didn't sound real and true. And
right.
It sounded super fake and super Valley Girl. And, you know, so that kind of was the difficulty. But and I think, you know, you would have discovered this working with Dave Walsh.
Yeah.
Who's, you know, fantastic. And I think it was actually because I just did a weekend with him, which was amazing.
Oh, man. Oh, I was so wanted to do that weekend.
Highly recommend it next time if you get the chance. And a lady, and I'm blanking on her last name, but Mary Jo, who's an executive producer at
Wisner?
ABC. No.
No.
Mary Lynn.
That's Mary Lynn.
No,
thank
yeah.
You.
There's a lady who's an executive producer at ABC Network came in, and that was her comment was don't hide what makes you you. Because the minute you stop hiding it, it's easier to embrace the other. Because if you hide it, you're apologizing for it. And that means you're apologizing for yourself. And the casting people see, they can see that deceit, for want of a better thing.
Yeah.
Rather than going, I am who I am and I'm putting this over the top, like you say, just like a thin veil, yeah. But it's not a big cloak or it's not a whatever.
I'm putting myself on these words. Something that Bill Holmes talks about with that of like looking at specs in an audition piece and
yeah.
Being all like, huh, oh, this character is is mid-30s and blue-collar, so I better put on my mid-30s blue-collar voice and just go, no, the specs got sorted out. It came to you to be you.
Yeah.
So do you. That's what we want, not what's your brilliant character move.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. So, yes. So then to that point, the accent thing is what is difficult now, if there is a difficulty, is just remembering I'm okay. Hmm. It's me just with an accent, as opposed to better not let them know you're Australian, because then they're going to, you know, and I think a lot of people with accents say this all the time as well. It's like Americans flub, like someone will in their own accent will say something and not quite say it properly you know, all the time. But right. No one goes,
you failure.
Charlatan.
Failure.
Who are you? You know, whatever. It's just like you flub. So is it inconceivable that I would flub? But if I'm hiding who I am, people see the flash of I made a mistake, secret. Blah, blah, rather than just blowing on through like everyone else would and having that confidence and whatever. So,
oh, man.
Yeah, so it's kind of fascinating acting exercise as well as just kind of life thing is don't hide who you are to please other people. Just be you and do the job that needs to be done that's there in front of you, and it will come, because I find, to the words of Dave Walsh, is that if I'm being true to the script and acting the script, the accent comes on and there's no issue.
Right.
If I'm in a character, there's never an issue because I already give myself the freedom to disappear and be that person. So
yeah.
So
so great.
Do it. Just so do great. It, people. That was a terrible Arnold Schwarzenegger.
What are you waiting for?
Kill
me.
Kill me now.
I have two questions that are fighting to come out. So I'm going to go with the second, which is what
42.
Is your process for taking a copy that comes to you and analyzing it from arriving in your mailbox to getting to your record session, whether it's to your talent agent to audition or doing it at home? What's your internal process breaking down copy and making character choices and all that other kind of stuff? Do you have said process, or is it more of an instinctual thing? Or
I don't know. See, I have the answer that I would like to say.
Tell me, but I don't want to hear the good actor.
That's what
because I know what my answer is.
Yeah.
Which is let me hear your answer.
Well, put it this way. Let me say, like, this is not the, you know, every good actor will do this. This is more when I feel like I've done a really good audition, like if I've properly committed, because I think we all get those auditions where it comes in and this is due in 15 minutes. The process is read it, think about it, do it, you know, because you don't have time.
Right.
So
a couple quick reads, maybe two or three takes if they don't like choke on extra takes.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
And then, you know, worst case scenario, do the old Franken edit in the room, put
the end
of one and the beginning of the other, and thanks very much. That sounds good enough.
Yeah.
Ideally, I do very much like to do the read it, walk away, and then come back to it.
Mm.
So I think more often than not, and I don't even really actively think about it when I walk away. So I'll you know, get the script, read the script, especially with character work, read through it, and then walk away and just kind of let it marinate. And maybe I won't actively think about it once, or maybe I'll constantly be going, oh, this, that, or the other. And then when I come back to it, I try – well, and at least my recent method has been I actually – because I find him – sorry, I'm flipping all over the place.
No, that's all right.
But I find if when I'm in an animation or a video game record, I will never do the whole script, ever. You do each line two or three times.
Yeah.
Maybe you have a run of a little paragraph if it links and it makes sense.
Right.
But if it's my line, next person's line. So I actually have somewhat recently to my own personal gratification and somewhat success, will do record each line two times and then go back. And obviously then I have to edit it together.
Yeah. But you're going to have to edit anyway.
I'm going to have to edit anyway.
That's so simple and so, I think, genius and appropriate.
Right. Because I feel like you're doing that in the session because you're trying to get the best thing. If you're in your booth, you're not having a conversation with the person anyway. So why not answer twice in two different ways and then stop, reset, have the next question get asked or the next response and then go through. And then if there is like something I did last night where it was kind of like a very quick run, you know, what's your name? Blah, blah, blah. Is it really? Maybe, you know, something, something, third line, you know. So then I would do that in a run because.
That's what you would do in the context of it. They would, in the if session. You were doing a thing for like Telltale, it'd be like, well, let's just do those three things together and then away you go. Versus, you know.
Well, and versus that followed by the big, massive chunk of, you know, heartfelt dialogue followed by the third scene. It's like do it in as it is. And so ideally that's what I try to do and that's what I find I walk away from the audition going, I really like that. I have a really good time doing that. Whereas I find if I do it in a run, unless I've got someone, occasionally I have done the old get someone in your ear doing the reading the opposite line because that helps as well.
I think so.
But
too.
But yeah, that's kind of where I like to go. And then with like character development and all of that, I think that just differs from piece to piece. You know, sometimes you look at it and you're like, I know exactly. No. And other times it's like, let's find out.
What is this and what kind of place can I put myself in? And maybe like I'll costume a thing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, whatever it takes, it's one of the great things about recording at home is that I have the luxury of time to sort that kind of stuff out.
Yeah. And also think about, I think the other thing that's been super helpful, which is a really great, you know, free note, is always think about environment that you're in. Because it really does, you know, the difference between you and I talking in person or you and I talking here or you and I when we were outside of the recording booth, they're all three different ways that you would talk to someone in terms of energy or pace or heightened or there's someone else in the room. Or so if you can always keep that in mind, it really does. It's a subtle change, but I think it's massive to the person. It's like because it's kind of like on camera.
Yeah.
You know, you don't just watch a whole movie shot in wide shot.
Wide shot or all in shot. Yeah.
Yeah, it's all, you know, all in close up. It flips and changes. And that's what makes it interesting. So if you're going to read the script, you're not going to do it all as if the person's sitting opposite you right now. So, So I try to keep that in mind as well. Like think of where you are and what you do.
That's really important. I got a note from when I was in a session for Telltale. It's out now for the Batman game. And where we did a line a couple times and I was trying to make it real cinematic.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to make we did a run of like, let's do from line, you know, 72 to 81, right? But and in that we're interspersed other lines. But we got to like halfway through and he stopped me. He was like, every one of these lines, in particular in this game, every line is there for a reason.
Right.
And you've got to really lift that line to make it important for the viewer or for the player.
Mm-hmm.
It's even though it's cinematic, it's not as cinematic as you're making it.
Interesting.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was a really interesting note, and now I'm trying to readjust. It's like having a chiropractor adjustment.
All right.
Where
right.
like now you're going, oh,
how does everything else now fit
with that? Everything else is kind of a little bit out of alignment because I'm trying to give the impact to this line, even if it's like a, oh man, we're running low on supplies. Like it might be an under the breath sort of a moment, but it still needs to have that. It needs to be billboarded just slightly to make the importance clear.
Well, that's right. Because you know, you got to cut through. And the thing is, because they want people sitting there to be having all the guns blasting around them and, you know, planes in the air and blah, blah, blah. And they want to be able to have that small moment with you.
Yeah.
But they can't and or might not necessarily cut into the character on the video, in the game, saying that. So you need to push it higher. But that's obviously, you know, when you have a great director telling you that, because you're never going to know that in the audition. But that's the kind of stuff I think in the audition. I mean, I would like to think that a director or a casting director will appreciate and recognize you made that choice, even if that choice is wrong.
The nuanced choice.
Yeah, because they'll go, oh, that guy gets it. Mm. You know, he's doing this quieter, smaller moment, but he knows he has to push it just a little bit to cut. You know, I mean, I think it's those little things that kind of then stand out to them, because, again, that's what you're going to have to be doing in the game. And I think that's what they're looking for, because sometimes the best performance isn't necessarily the performance that fits with everything and everyone else.
That's absolutely
either.
True.
Actually, speaking of that, like I had a really great moment recently as well with like a realization moment of something like that, where it was there's a new cartoon that just came out that I won't say what it is or whatever, because I don't want to embarrass the person by saying that I was watching your performance. But it was like for a role that I auditioned for, that I remember getting the audition and going, bang, I know that 100%. I'm all over. This is me as, you know, an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
Totally, you know, weird, quirky, whatever. And then, and I didn't get it, and that's fine. And then a girl that I know got it, who is incredibly talented, and it's like, oh, that's awesome. But she's not a big celebrity. She's not a big voiceover star or whatever. So I was kind of like, oh, I would love to know what she did to see, because, you know, because I'm fascinated by that. You know, this is incredible opportunity that you can't just blow off with, well, they've got 15,000 Twitter followers, or but they're a celebrity and they do this and that. You know, it's like, no, this is someone who I consider a peer, and maybe she's done, you know, more than me, but I wouldn't have thought so much more to
be the thing that pushes it over, that it came down to the truth of the performance.
Exactly. So what did she have, and what can I learn from that? And then before I even saw what she did, which is, and she's hilarious and wonderful in it, but I saw the other lead female. And the lead female was exactly what I did for the support character. Now, there's no way I would have been able to know that.
Right.
The sound of the voice, the character, the essence of it. Yep. Also, and I will say, like, the character drawing has now changed slightly, and I wasn't to know that. But it was just fascinating, the exploration that I went, there is stuff that's just out of your control, you know.
Boy. That's fascinating.
And I think I did a great performance, but they're never going to pick my performance, because that's exactly the same as the lead girl,
right,
who is incredibly talented and super famous and deservedly so in voiceover. But that was the thing that knocked me out, not because I'm not good enough or blah, 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 or this girl was, you know, the girl that got it was better. It's like my choice clashed.
Yeah.
And her choice
complimented
and so spectacular. And I think that's again, in an audition, you know, there are just things that you just need to do the best you can do, because everything else is out of your control. And you aren't to know if they want to, you know, you think it's cinematic, but they go, well, we actually need this. So it's, you just got to put it in other people's hands. So
the type of cinematic that you're seeing is not
what it is.
You're making it a Ridley Scott picture, and in reality, it's a Terrence Malick film.
That's right.
And you don't get any of that.
Mm-hmm.
Or you might get some of that in the character description, but more often than not, what you're getting is kind of the broad strokes, generic, to get you in the right direction.
Yeah.
That it's not too cartoony, or it's not too announcery or whatever, and then to fit into this thing and then see what you do.
Yeah, exactly. And obviously, it's your, you know, our role in the production of whatever it is, be it commercial or video game animation or telephony or whatever it is.
Yes, on-hold messaging.
My favorite. I love my on-hold messaging. But, you know, it's very easy to become egocentric about that and go, it's all about my performance and I'm amazing and blah, blah, blah. But the reality is there's, like, you know, hundreds, if not thousands in some of those big AAA video games of people that are creating your character. So shut your mouth, do the job.
That's right.
Because it's as much theirs as it is yours.
That's
so,
right.
You know, if you don't know something, learn what it is, take it on and move on. Don't, you know, there's no, well, I think that actually, you know, maybe if you've been doing it for 5 years, sure.
Right. But if you're walking into the room after, like I've done a little bit of stuff on some Warcraft, and like the guys who hold the keys to those characters is just,
oh my goodness.
I mean, they'll tell you everything and love to tell you everything about it. And you, and like I come in with a blink at the character and go, oh, he's this.
Yeah.
And like,
and I know immediately
from
my 2 pages of my audition.
That's right. It's pretty clear that my choices are correct. Let me ask you this question.
Please.
Just because I know that you're in lots of different genres of the work, commercial and narration and and that stuff.
Yeah.
How do you – where does it – I have a similar bend. I like being a jack. I like being a Swiss Army knife.
Yeah, me too.
It's fun and
I agree.
Unique challenge.
Yeah.
But it is a challenge in those ways of what is the definition of a specific, the shape of your knife versus using the metaphor of the Swiss Army knife versus the shape of your toothpick versus the shape. And do you ever run into those things intersecting in a way? And trying to keep that from happening. Does that make sense? Or if
it does. No. It totally does. And I think what you might have – my answer to that a month ago actually is different to today.
Interesting.
Because I stumble on my words a lot. I think that – I can't speak English – is that as long as you are truthful – Doesn't matter what shape the box is, what shape, you know, each job will do its job. So if you are there to be the character in the animated piece, or you are there to be the apple peeler, then be the apple peeler. If you are there to do the promo job, you know, or the scissors or whatever, this is going to turn into a really crap analogy. I'm going to try my hardest.
Stay with it.
No, I'm going to stay with
it. Don't pull the parachute on it. Don't pull the ripcord on the analogy. Stay
right.
But
it is. But it, as long as you do the job that's in front of you and the truth of what's there, whether it's animation or promo or commercial or it they all have their own truths behind it. I just had this moment of going, super wanky actor. But it's true. But I think it's – like, I mean, I do. I really do believe that. Like, before it was like I really did think, oh, there's a difference to promo and animation and video game and everything. And whilst it is in the essence of there's a square hole and a round hole and a triangular hole, whatever – you all go into those spaces. Like the thing that's the same is you drop into that space. If you allow yourself into drop into that space and be truthful to that space, then you're going to do the job that's required for you. But if for me, I find that if I start thinking too much about it, if I think too much about, oh, I'm the scissors now and I have to cut and I have to do this, that's when maybe it's it's probably different for everyone, but for me, I found that's when I put on a fake performance, or that's when the promo voice comes out, or
right.
You know, as opposed to the words are there, someone else has done that job, I don't need to do that job.
Right.
I just need to speak the truth of what is written there, and if I understand what is written, whether it's the 5-year-old girl or it's the, you know, the documentary about bears on Discovery Channel, as long as I'm true and honest to what is written in front of me and understand it, it's my journey is exactly the same. Is that?
I think that's a great – that's a really helpful approach to that work. I think you're right that you really – and it's very – it sounds like – it's reminiscent of Walsh's thing about just tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the copy doesn't know where it is.
Yeah.
He said, here, I think. He's like, the copy doesn't know whether you're reading it in a car or whether you're reading it in your booth. And I think the same thing is true in terms of the copy doesn't necessarily know what it is. Mm-hmm. If it needs to be – if the truth is, you know, go to McDonald's, what's your truth on that versus how do I make this sound like a commercial?
Yeah. And I do caveat that with different genres have – certain parameters, but it is a matter of don't kind of, you know, try and slam that animation thing into your promo read, like adjust to the parameters. But if the truth isn't there, it don't matter, you know. Yeah. It doesn't matter at all. You know, it's still not gonna – you could do that perfect one. And I think there's a lot of – and I'm going to say guys because I think it's more stereotypical for guys to be in the promo world, but have these spectacular promo voices and they don't book work. And they're like, but I sound, and everyone says, you sound exactly like those guys. And, you know, but the difference is it doesn't matter how much you fit the parameters. If you're not truthful, who cares anymore, you That's know? Right. So that, yeah. But you know, I think that takes – I think that's one of those, once you understand the parameters, you can allow yourself that freedom to follow the, yeah, to let it go. Exactly. Yeah. But until you've done the work to get to that point,
yeah,
you can't, you know, it's harder to let that go. And in saying that, that's what, it's still difficult. Like, it's not like I'm proficient at it. Otherwise, you know.
I think there is a perception of being, whether you're a professional labeling, I don't know, professional voice talent, and you've done so many things and so many shows and so many games or whatever, that now it's just as easy as, or that you can snap your fingers and it rains money.
Yeah.
Or, you know what I mean? That it is a daily pursuit of telling the truth for every piece of copy that comes in, and strengthening your ability to. Strengthening your ability to find ways to tell the truth in new and inventive ways.
That's right. And I think, and this is, you know, another more kudos to Dave Walsh and all the other amazing coaches, because everyone tells their own, tells the same story in a different way.
Yeah.
But, you know, what resonated with me was when he, and I think Nancy Wolfson also said this, and whatever, everyone else, Maurice Tobias, everyone, but is the fact that is why celebrities get all the work that they get, because they are confident in their truth, because they know who they are and they know how they walk into the room and they are Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman, blah, 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 whoever.
The script is written for their voice.
And it's written for them. So they don't have to be, am I doing this right or whatever? And or they've been asked to come in and just be themselves. So that's why they are proficient. They are celebrities because they have become proficient at being themselves. And I think that's similar to like the really, you know, the people who are working a bunch in voiceover are people who have learnt how to, you know, be true and honest to themselves. And if I can kind of bookend back to the beginning, I think that goes back to a lot of that self-talk and that internalization, you know, just being confident and clear with who you are and what you want and where you want to be. And it, you know, it can't happen all the time, but like the Gladwell thing of the more you practice, the more times you do it, the more it fits in. And that's why these people keep getting the work and they get more work, because work begets work, because people are confident and happy with where they are in life, or at least in their career.
Yeah. And then the trick is to find that happiness and confidence in every stage of your journey.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. And similarly, you know, in family, in friendships, in mentors, in whatever, in your day job or whatever, like if surround yourself with things that are complementary to where you want to be in life. Because ultimately, unless you know, success doesn't breed happiness. Happiness breeds success. And so if you in everywhere in your life can surround yourself with things that make you happy,
yeah,
the natural progressions should be the rest comes to you.
Yay!
Yay!
True.
Fix the world.
True. Fix the world.
Amazing.
Solved. Boom.
Thanks, everyone.
And you like brought it back around to the top. It was perfect.
Isn't that amazing? Mm. These are the things that I do for you, Kim.
And that's why I brought you in.
So for the next 20 minutes, damn it, I thought we were on time.
And now we have to do a tale for the kite. Tell me how people can find you on social media and that kind of stuff if people are interested and people want to follow you and learn about the cool and exciting things that you've got broiling.
Learn when my Aussie Day party is. Mm-hmm. Yes. I am on Twitter and Instagram as Larissa La or Larissa L-A, whatever you'd like to say, L-A-R-I-S-S-A-L-A. I am on Facebook as Larissa Gallagher. I think I have a fan page, but... I don't know. Facebook just...
I don't like Facebook.
I
don't like it right now either. And the fan page feels weird to me. I know it's necessary.
Yeah.
And I'm listen, if you've visited a fan page and you like someone that's awesome, I've just linked my fan page to my Twitter page and that's how I update it.
Oh, that's probably a good idea.
That helps. And I honestly like my profile picture on my fan page a lot better.
Oh, interesting.
And I've been doing LinkedIn a lot more.
Oh, yeah. So I'm on LinkedIn as well. I think it's just my name generally. I go in and out with LinkedIn, but I think that's, you know, it's I think social media generally, if you're not dedicated to it, it don't work. So, you know, if you're in the LinkedIn mindset, it's going to work for you if you're on Twitter and what. And I think for me, I found Twitter and, well, Instagram probably more so just because it's easier again. But yeah, that's the kind of the world that sits easier for me. But I'm on everything. I think I'm even on Snapchat, even though I never post.
I like Snapchat. I never post because I'm always afraid I'm direct messaging people. Oh, and then I'm like, I don't want to bother you with my stupid picture of me doing an impression of Harrison Ford.
Well, that's it. Like I was going to say, actually, I am on Snapchat a lot. Similarly, making all those stupid videos because I freaking love it. And I occasionally do flip those to Instagram. But again, I don't know. It's just always that fine line of, I want to share as much of myself as possible.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, if I don't keep a piece of me for me, then
that's
tough as well. So, I think that's what I like about Instagram and Twitter is it's more little short grabs of life. What did someone said? It's like a cocktail party.
That's great.
Like, you know, if you do something a little bit outrageous, it's forgotten about the next day. But, you know, it's not like a wedding where it'll be immortalized.
It'll be
forever.
There forever.
That's right, which is what I feel like Facebook is. But anyway, yes Twitter, agree. Twitter, Instagram, Larissa La, Facebook, LinkedIn, Snapchat.
Talk about that's coming that people should look for, or is it all under NDA stuff? You've got some stuff broiling, but and you can't talk, and that's totally fine.
I've got a really big thing that I've been holding on to for a couple of years, which just hurts, but that's meant to be coming out soon. But you won't know when. Maybe you'll realize when it comes out that's what it is. I've got a couple of video games that have been around. I do Monster High for all the 8-year-olds listening out there. All the moms and dads.
I have your character's picture all over our house.
Oh, do you?
Oh, yeah. Ilsa loves Monster High.
Oh, that's
loves
fun.
It. Yeah. So
I do.
Fun.
I do love me some Monster High myself, I have
did
to
you
say.
Did you see the Face Off episode where they did the...
I did.
And your guy, your character won.
She did.
It was a beautiful...
She amazing.
Yeah, amazing.
That's incredible. Those people are... unbelievably talented.
So freaking
cool. So incredible. Yeah. But yes, there is a new Monster High movie out, I want to say on March 28th.
Awesome.
Or very close to around there, which is great, electrified. So I don't think Laguna makes I think it's a Frankie Stein's
Frankie
movie.
Story. Yeah.
Frankie Stray. But, you know, I'm there. I'm hanging out.
Awesome.
Doing Laguna-ish stuff. So that I can definitely talk about. But
that's
the
awesome.
Other stuff, I'm sorry.
That is fine. I'm so happy that you not only are having the success that you're having, but
thank you.
That you're just willing to come in and share your stories and experience and inspiration today. It was really, really great just to be able to sit down with you.
Yeah, for you, Kiff, anytime.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Larissa Gallagher, is that how I've been? Yeah. Everyone does the hard G.
Well, you know, I do it because when I'll tell you exactly why. Because when I do auditions and I have to do an American accent, it's easier for me to go, Larissa Gallagher.
Huh.
So anyway, blah, 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 blah. Whereas if I go, Larissa Gallagher, So from my family, it is Gallagher.
Okay.
But I don't correct people if they do it the other way.
Well, Larissa Gallagher is here. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks
for tuning in, and we'll holler at you soon. Peace.
This has been All Over VoiceOver with Kiff VH. For questions to be either answered on Twitter or on an upcoming cast, tweet to the show at All Over VO Kiff. Till next week, you get what you get and don't get upset. Claim victory and depart the field.